Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast. Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
This week we look at European migrations, notably the Vikings from Norway, who appear to have established colonies in Iceland, in Greenland, and in North America several hundred years earlier than has been reported. This new data has recently been highlighted in a number of articles and papers, and today we're going to hear from a scholar who has studied the Inuit people of Greenland and their connection to the Vikings of Europe. All this and more today on Earth Ancients. For Saturday, May 13, 2023, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, how you doing? We've had some exceptional scholars on the program the last few weeks. We've had Dr. Paulette Steeves, the indigenous archaeologist, giving us amazingly old periods for human settlements in North America. I mean, if you look at her chart alone, and by the way, if you're not on earthancients.com under Facebook feeds, go to the Facebook page and find either the group or the international page. Look at the charts that she has identified for settlements that exceed 100,000 years ago. Most of them are in the range of 120 to 150. And I think she's mentioning that some of those other sites that are listed there, over 100, maybe it may exceed 100,000 years. So this is beginning to give us a picture, not only of very, very early Homo sapiens in North America, but the fact that they had established colonies very, very, very early in Earth's history. Today, my guest is an academic who has discovered that the Vikings of Norway were in the Americas significantly earlier than is being reported. In fact, it's so early that an article came out in the newspaper a few weeks ago highlighting the details of the Vikings in America. And this new research paper that is actually in the news shows that the wood that was cut for settlements in Greenland and parts of Canada came from what is currently the East Coast border of the United States. And this new revelation is not only wonderful, wonderfully clear by showing that this wood, where this wood came from, but also helps us understand that there were people from Europe in the Americas very, very early. In fact, we're going to hear today that not only were the Scandinavian cultures in present-day United States, there is evidence for much earlier people up and down the Mississippi. And we've had people on the program, most notably Dr. Greg Little, who has outlined the details of the mound builders that go back several thousand years that we know of with current carbon dating of the artifacts found in these dwellings. So this is becoming, you know, a regular occurrence that discoveries are being made that push back settlements into extreme age. Now, it's my belief that the Maya are extremely old, and this is obviously North America, but in Mexico, and they are beginning to establish dates that exceed 3,000 years in the past. And, you know, when we had Dr. Hansen on the program, who's excavating El Mirador, you know, he said a few things that would shock most of the general public. One is that the Olmec were contemporaries of the Maya. That statement alone was a real shocker for me, because everyone thinks that the Olmec were the mother culture of the Maya. As it turns out, they were contemporaries. They probably traded among each other. And it's obvious that there is a likely shared science, especially the calendrical sciences. And it may also move into the astronomy, areas of astronomy, sightings and things like that. One of the things that I was curious about is that we have these observatories in the Americas. The one I wrote an article on, the El Caracol, which is in Chichen Itza, it really looks, when you put the building together under tight tolerances, it really looks like there were optics involved. And this would make sense when you begin looking at some of the codices where they're studying Venus, the moon, and neighboring planets to the level of accuracy that naked eye vision or sightings are nearly impossible to capture the details that are figured in these codices. So today my program is the Vikings of Norway, the establishment of Greenland cities, the history of the Inuit people of the Greenland, which are the indigenous people, their intermixing with the Vikings. What is being established is a very, very early, very, very early settlements in North America, along the coast, East Coast, and in through the Hudson Bay area. So they actually got their ships in through the Atlantic Ocean and then into the Great Lakes. So I keep thinking of what Graham Hancock has to say, which is things just keep getting older. And this is great because these discoveries are solid. They're establishing changes. It's just taking forever to get into our history books. And this is the problem. Things just are, you know, it's just a sluggish, almost to the point where it has to be a buy-in of these new theories by a certain number of scientists before anything is changed, which is kind of a bit of a problem, I think. So anyhow, today's program is Mysteries of the Far North, and my guest is Jacques Privet. Hey, guys. After 3 years of restrictions, COVID-based problems, Contact in the Desert is back. It's back in Indian Wells, California. It's a suburb of Palm Springs, and it is an amazing world-class conference. From June 2nd through the 4th, you can hear people like Graham Hancock, A.V. Loeb, Linda Moulton Howe, and over 125 experts, scientists, and research investigators that will provide you with the latest information on a variety of topics. This is a chance to see your favorite author, meet with them personally, and spend a weekend hearing the latest from the greatest. For more information, go to contactinthedesert.com and get all the details. Be sure to stop by and see me. We'll be there recording, interviewing, and I'd love to hear from you. Contact in the Desert, June 2nd to the 4th. For more information, contactinthedesert.com.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So the Vikings have been in the news lately. There was a national article done from a report on research done in Greenland of buildings that had been created using wood from North America. And the article actually even says that the analysis shows there was Viking people in Greenland approximately 500 years ago. And it's funny because we always think of Columbus, Christopher Columbus, as being the founder. We're taught, even though it's not true, and many of us know that it's not true, we're still exposed to this fallacy that he was the original founder of the North American continent. And the Vikings are growing in not only the stories, but evidence, as we'll show today, of very, very early migrations from Europe into Iceland and Greenland. And my guest today has written a fascinating book called Mysteries of the Far North, The Secret History of the Vikings in Greenland and North America. And I got to tell you, I was taking a look at it and catching up and preparing for this interview, and it's astounding what my guest today has found. The author is, and my guest, is Jacques Prévat, and he is a PhD from Sorbonne. He is a translator of Scandinavian languages. And this is fascinating to think about because the Vikings are much older and much more, their outreach is much greater than we would ever conceive. And when we think about the Vikings, we think about their travels, their hardiness, their ability to to migrate from Europe to other locations. But this is a real eye-opener. So, hey, Jacques, welcome to Earth Ancients. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks.
So how did you get involved with the Vikings? Obviously, if you're studying Scandinavian languages, you must have run across perhaps maps or myths or different stories that led you to write this book.
Well, I had to cope with many, many different sources. And, that was quite a work, but fascinating in a way. And I was quite happy to give back, some light on forgotten sources, especially the native one, because we have testimony from the Inuit about these strange people, namely the Vikings. And even better, we have some sculptures from the Middle Age that refer to them. Well, some people still discuss it, but as I've done also some research that was my master subject, I've done some research on Inuit art. So for me, it was quite clear that it was referring to the Vikings.
So talk a little bit about the Inuit people who are in Greenland. How far back do they go? Where are they? Are they like migrating from the Bering Strait, like a lot of other North American native indigenous people, or how did they land in Greenland?
Well, that's a long story. There were different waves. Huh? To make it short, it goes back to 4,000 years, but this one never met the Vikings. But just to make a short presentation, there were different waves, and the oldest, they were the how do you call them the independence culture. Mm-hmm. And then the Sakak culture, the oldest one were coming from west to east on Greenland. Mm-hmm. And, that, in short, that's 2,500 years ago. And so they move from west to to east. But we can't talk about colonization because they were hunters. So they were just following the games. Huh? So there were periods where they were here. Then there were periods where they disappeared, and there were different waves. And the ones that are interesting for us, they are named Dorset culture. Mm-hmm. And Thule, especially Thule. Dorset is quite interesting because they came from west, from Canada, around Baffin. And they came up up north to Greenland, and actually there were two different Dorset waves, the one we call Dorset 1 and the one we call Dorset 2.
So does that mean that there was a, from say 2,500 years ago, one wave of people showed up and then another wave followed them?
Yeah, the more or less we can say like this, mm-hmm. but I don't know if you want a real ciphers. As I said, the oldest one was Independence, and even this one, this culture, there were two waves. The okay. oldest one, we call it Independence 1, and they came in 2,500 years before Christus. And they were followed quite a little bit after by the Sakrak culture, 2,000 years before Christus. Then there was another wave, Independence, the second, this one. And well, the researchers do not agree, but let's say it was 1100 before Christus.
You're 1100 BC, right?
BC.
BC, right.
Until 700 for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And they also came from west and they traveled Perry land and they went down to the east coast from the north.
Okay.
And these ones, they are pretty old. And the ones that interest us, they are named Dorset, two waves, Dorset.
The Dorset culture.
Yeah, Dorset culture, yeah.
Right.
And this one was coming also from west, Baffin Island. And it was 500 years before Christus,
mm-hmm.
to around 300 years after.
Okay, so I want to ask you now, you have made a very strong case for the oral traditions of these indigenous people. And we've had other field researchers on the program who have also used indigenous oral traditions to chronicle activities like migrations. In the case of the Intuit or the Dorset or Thule cultures, are these handed down generation to generation? Are they? How do you reference the oral traditions? Is it a comparative study, or I mean, can you compare the Dorset with the Thule people, and they both have the same kind of a story? Or talk about the oral traditions that you use.
Well, the one we have, they are much more recent. And most of them, yeah, they come back to the Thule culture, and that was the one that for sure met the Vikings. But the second wave of Dorset also met them, and this we can find it with the descriptions. The Viking description, because it was not really noticed by people for a long time. But in the sagas, we have some details or some details missing. For example, dogs, sledge, and all these small details refer to a mm-hmm. culture or another. And the Dorset culture, for example, had no sledge. They were not so advanced technically like the Thule. Also, they were hunting big game like walrus. But the top culture, if we can say so, was the Thule culture. And many, many details like Doug Slade and marine description refer to this culture.
Okay, so we have a indigenous people living there for thousands of years, and in your book you present the oral traditions of these indigenous people and their meeting of white men 5 centuries ago or 500 years ago. And when they describe the white man, how do they describe them?
Well, that was the interesting point, because the general theory was conflicts and so on was between the two communities. And what was amazing was to find both, violent confrontation, but it's not a majority in their tales. And what was more astonishing, there were many peaceful descriptions and a description of games and so on. And for me, there was something to dig. Excuse me.
Okay.
And there was a difference with the Viking description, because most of the Viking sources describe conflictual sequences. And we have to put it in the philosophy of this time, because they were representing civilization and the native were the white people and so on. And there were some gaps. excuse me. One.
Okay, they're describing these white men who are coming. Are they saying it's an invasion, or are they coming and looking for settlements, or are they landing there because they need to have raw resources to bring back to their homeland?
Well, it depends which period you consider.
Well, this will go all the way back to like 500 years when they first arrived.
You mean the Vikings?
Vikings, yeah.
Yeah, well, first it was a normal colonization made by Eric the Red.
Right.
So they were settling on the West Coast. And you have to keep in mind that Vikings were very, very, let's say, adventurous people, so they had to move. And Greenland is that big, of course, they were curious, so they went up north. And this is interesting because the colonization started in 985, and a few years after, they just followed the coast and went up north. And that's where and when they met native people, because this time they were staying in the north. They had different economies, different needs. So the big game was in the north, and that's where the first meeting took place.
Okay. One of the things, and you just mentioned Eric the Red, talk a little bit about who he was, but one of the things you bring up in your book, which I find fascinating, is the fact that they, in some ways, are being forced to turn to Christianity, and this may have been the reason for them wanting to leave their home country so they could kind of retain their pagan roots. So talk about Eric the Red a little bit, would you?
Well, Eric the Red was a bit reluctant to the new religion. That was his wife, Jodil, who first adopted uh, the new religion. It took time for Eric. And this was in the Eastern colony, because there were two colonies, the one in the south and the one a little bit more up north.
You're talking about north and south Greenland.
Well, you can't say north, but let's the other one, the western colony, was around the actual capital, Gotlandnuk. And there were differences. These ones, they were also Christian, but that's the one that disappeared at first in the 14th century. Mm-hmm. And many, many people suspect that they just abandoned the Christian religion. And so we have two different cases. And the other colony disappeared 200 years later. So it was not the same, let's say, attraction for the Christian faith. Otherwise, I don't remember what you were asking.
Who is Eric the Red? Where did he come from? What country?
Well, he came. Well, he was banned from Iceland because, like many tourists, he was a bit querulous and he got some problems with a neighbor, killed him because it was a question of land and I don't know how you call this kind of plot that they use to mark your land, that he did lend to a neighbor and never got back. So it ended by a murder. So Eric the Red was sentenced and he had to leave Iceland.
Was he forced to leave, or he left?
Yeah, he was banned.
So they actually made him leave Iceland.
Yeah, there was a judgment, and the judgment was banishment of Eric the Red.
Oh my God!
And in this time, this happened in 982, and as many people he had already heard about a mysterious land on the west. Mm-hmm. So he had plenty of time. He just sailed west and then found Greenland, if we may say so. But there were some other people who found it before. But that's his story. And while he was using this time, 3 years, you know, you have a lot of time, he was sailing around Greenland up to Disko Bay. It's a bit far north, huh? And then he found it quite nice, and then he got this idea of coming back with a whole colony. And when his banishment was finished, he came back to Greenland, to Iceland, made some advertising, if we may say so, and then could attract quite many people. And then in 985, a whole colony moved there to the Eastern settlement and the Western.
On Greenland.
That's how the story began.
Okay. So did he have maps, or did he just navigate by seeing the coastal edge of Greenland?
Yeah, that's funny question, and because Vikings were known, and all Scandinavian, for their total ignorance of map and their very bad ability to make them. Actually, maps were the production of from the clerics, you know. That means technically, on a technical point of view, they were not that very good. And I gave some example in the book. most of them were made by some bishops, and they were mixing traditions, old sagas, and facts and geographical facts. So the result was something pretty poor. Anyway, neither Eric the Red nor the other Vikings used the maps. It was noticed by many people, even some Italians who said it, who wrote it, that the Vikings were never using the needle or the stone to navigate. And, well, they were, of course, following the coast, but after you have to be in the open sea. So they were using the sun, the stars, and they are also a special instrument with a needle, a kind of pin, and they used the shadow made by the sun to find their way. Otherwise, they were also, it's mentioned in the sagas, they were using birds. When they were guessing some lands not that far away, they just made the bird free and just followed the same.
So they weren't really using any true navigation techniques. They were using,
not at all.
So they must have not been too far out in sea. They must have been close to the shoreline as they're finding Greenland, right?
Well, Greenland is not that far for them. You know, Vikings were coming from Norway, Denmark. So if they could come all this way along, it was pretty easy for them to find the next door on the west side.
Okay.
And they had also some favorable currents, huh? So that's the technique that was used by some researcher. For example, Helge Ingstad used the same technique, following the current in this way from Greenland. He just ended in Canada, and even found a Newfoundland by this way. So
what do you say to this article that came out that the University of Iceland analyzed wood from five Norse sites in Western Greenland that were occupied between 1000 and 1400, the year 1400. Also, the wood came from North America. So what do you say to that?
Well, that's just a confirmation of what everybody knew, because actually there's no wood, no trees in Greenland. Also because of the of the Vikings, let's say,
deforestation.
Behavior.
They kind of
They just wasted the few trees that were growing there, and they did the same mistake. It's well known they did the same mistake that they did in Iceland. There were a few trees when they discovered Iceland, but as sailors, they were needing woods and so on. But these places are quite sensible, according to climate. So if you destroy the few vegetation, well, it's pretty difficult to get it back. And the cattle was also destroying the vegetation, and this is also well known. So they were needing wood, and the wood coming from America was just welcome.
Yeah, it's funny because they mentioned the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and I'm not familiar with that part. That's up by Canada. But what do you know about any settlements that would be in North America that were Viking?
This is the problem. Well, the real settlement that is totally sure, 100%, is Newfoundland. That was discovered by this Norwegian researcher, Helge Ingstad. There are many other places, but they are still discussed. And that's the problem. But I'm sure that one day or another, we will find some proofs, because we know that they have been there for several centuries. The difficulty is to attribute paternity, who was really there. And the real place that is sure is Newfoundland. But there are other places named in Hudson Bay and Ungava Bay also, but they are still discussed. But I think, because there were, for example, dwellings looking like Viking dwellings. But
In Hudson Bay, the Hudson Bay area of the United States?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think we should not only consider the dwellings, but all the elements. So this way we could be sure that there was some Viking there. Because if you only take one element, just like the houses, the discussion never end. But if you put together all the elements, for example, in Hudson Bay or Ungava, they also found other things that remind quite a lot of Norse activities. For example, nest. Vikings were well known to make some nests for the eider ducks, because they were using the feathers, and no other population is having this kind of activity. No Indians, neither Inuit. That's one example, and the other things like this that could aim at a Nordic population.
Fascinating.
And, that's what I try to do in my book.
We're going to take a short commercial break and allow our sponsors to identify themselves, and we'll return with Jacques Privet shortly discussing his new book, Mysteries of the Far North. We'll be right back.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My guest today is Jacques Privet. He is a French linguist specializing in Scandinavian dialects, and he has written a book on the Vikings called Mystery of the Far North, The Secret History of the Vikings in Greenland and North America.
I'm curious because you do bring up a lot of information on maps, and you mentioned the map of Claudius Clavius.
Yes.
And
was it then?
It's almost like, to keep bringing people from Norway, the Vikings must have had some map to use.
Well, it was the exception, but okay, when he went to Rome in the 15th century, but there is no saga talking about the use of these maps. And this very rare exception with Claudius Clavus is that this map he made, that is quite famous and that was used by many, many people and cartographers. Many people, even the Zeno, they use it back and copy it. But this was some kind of joke, as I explained in my book, because, well, the drawing is pretty good. Huh? It's not the worst drawing of Greenland, if we consider the period. But what is really, really a big shame, that was a joke. And Danish researcher Bjørn Bo, who found it in 1912, because of course Claudius Clavus never went to Greenland, so he had to fill this map, so he just put all the toponym they were borrowed from a medieval song.
Oh, my God. So that was a fake map, huh?
Yeah, that was a fake map. And it was only discovered in 1912.
It does have some interesting coastal lines that kind of look like Iceland and Greenland, don't they? On the map. The map has some peculiar landforms that are kind of similar to Greenland, right?
Yeah, well, the shape is not that bad, huh?
Yeah.
But all the names are completely wrong, and that's a pretty good joke. And it was only one century that it was discovered. And this map was influencing all his fellows by this time.
Yeah. How about the George, what is his last name? Mercator.
Mercator has nothing to do with Clavius. He was a real geographer, and he was pretty good. And they are much more interesting because he gave some very good information. For example, at first, the shape of Greenland is pretty good. And you have to notice that in all of the maps, there's only one part of Greenland because the whole shape of Greenland was unknown. This time, people thought it was a land and not an island. Only the Portuguese gave some different sound later. But Mercator, for example, testifies the presence of Nordic people in the Nordic island, the Canadian islands. For me, that was in Devon Island. And he gives good illustration with many crosses that remind all the stories of crosses, Christian crosses that were supposed to be there before the big colonization. Jacques Cartier heard about these stories. The first discoverers heard about these crosses, yes. And there's nothing wrong with Mercator.
So, but you're saying that the Vikings necessarily didn't really use maps, and so these maps were made by who were the cartographers that actually made them?
Well, most of them they came from the south, and the one I use, namely. Well, there was no Italy, but Genova, Venezia.
So the Italians were up in the Greenland area.
They had good knowledge because Roma has an eye, a very, very, very suspicious eye on the Arctic. So they have good illustration and maps, but otherwise the German, because Germany was not existing at this time, and of course the Portuguese, and they offer very, very good maps.
So here's my question to you, is that are you familiar with the Perry Rees map?
Which one?
Perry Rees. There's a lot of stories that these earlier maps that are ancient were used by the Italians and perhaps the Vikings, and they actually copied very early maps and added their own landlines and cartography to them. Is that a possibility with some of these maps?
Well, I've seen it, this map, but... it didn't attract my attention, so I don't remember why.
I mean, Perry Rees' map actually shows Greenland and Iceland.
Yeah,
and much of the North American coast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't remember how it looked like. And I know I had it in my hand. So for one reason or another one, I didn't use it. So, but I'm not sure that it had an influence on Nordic knowledge of these areas.
I have to say this, though. It's funny how you describe the Vikings. They're just kind of like not wanting to learn how to navigate correctly. They're kind of just toughing it out, watching for the birds, looking for the sky and the stars. I mean, if they're using the stars as a navigation tool, are they using a compass?
No. This is testified. Huh? That's incredible. But they couldn't go quite far anyway.
I know. So what type of navigation are they using? Any technology at all?
Well, this is an instrument, I forgot the name, kind of needle that was standing on a small circle, and they were using the shadow, and gave some position. But I forgot the name of this one. That was the only instrument that is testified.
Okay. I want you to talk a little bit about Hudson Bay settlements. You know, we've been talking a lot about Greenland, but are there Viking settlements that far into North America, Hudson Bay?
Well, the settlements have never been found. And But there are good reasons to believe they have been in America. Actually, this mythical place that they call Nuremberg is much more interesting because it gave birth to maps, and it comes back so often that there is something to dig. Because in this time, when all the nations were just eager and fighting to take new lands in America, they, for almost a century, they just put Nuremberg and give it to Nordic colonies. So it means they must have seen these people there. Okay. But after one century, just disappeared, just close to New England and New France. And there are quite a lot. But I think these settlements they had, they were not that big. That's the explanation I gave. Because we have been looking for big towns, something like this. And I think they had spots here and there. And for example, in Nuremberg, there might have been quite many there to give birth for such a myth. What I believe.
Right. Talk about the Book of the Icelander and what does it reveal?
Oh, well, it's the one I have to remember. That's about the colony in the colonies in Iceland, and a part is also touching Greenland. And it's not fresh in my mind.
It's probably like at least 1,000 years old, right? I mean,
This is good. Well, let's say what is good, it goes back so far. It's the beginning of the colonization. So, and it just testified that they were going up north and could be America as early at around 1,000 or a little bit after the year 1,000.
And this book is this book in a university library? Is it? I mean,
yeah. Well, you can find it in universities or good libraries too. Yeah.
Okay. The book we're talking. Go ahead.
It's a classical from history, for Nordic history. So
who wrote the book?
I think it was Ari. That was an old lord Ari. I forgot it will come back.
So he's a descendant of the Viking.
He was a learner. Well, Iceland, to the difference of Greenland, had a different, groups. The society was going from the lower level, peasants and so on, and you have every category in of the society in Iceland, and this was much more limited in Greenland. For example, no book was found in Greenland, and nothing seemed to show the existence of libraries or writing production in Greenland. That was pretty different in Iceland. They are famous for this.
Okay. So the book we're talking about is Mysteries of the Far North, The Secret History of the Vikings in Greenland and North America. My guest today is Jacques Privet. If you were to guess at how early the Vikings were in what we call North America, Canada, and present-day United States, would you say that it's earlier than the 500 years that they've currently found? In your study of oral traditions, do the Vikings or white settlers go back even further than the 500 years?
If we talk about the Vikings, for me, it's pretty sure that just after landing in Greenland, they were such adventurous people and curious. So anyway, they were needing, as we say, they were needing for wood, so they had to look somewhere else. And there was all this big profit to make with ivory and catching polar bears and falcon. And all these products can only be found in Canada, on North Greenland and Canada.
Right.
So they had to go there. And
so how, if you were to guess, how early would you go? Would you be, you'd say 500 years? Would you go 1,000 years?
Yeah. Well, they came, they settled in Greenland in 985.
Right.
So already around 1,000 years.
So you think they're actually going to North America?
We have proof for sure for 1,100. But I suspect they started much more earlier.
So maybe 1,500 to 2,000 years?
Well, 2,000 now, but around 1,000 after Christus, they were there in America.
Wow. And but we don't have, as you said, we don't have any evidence of dwellings, buildings, or...
That's the problem, yeah. There might be some. We have evidence of artifacts, but no big proof. But artifacts that could only come from Vikings, huh? Worked iron, you know, that the native didn't know. Thing like this, even garments from Nordic people, and. Many things like this. So they have been there. They even found a coin. A coin that was around the Penobscot River, a place belonging to this medical area named Norumbega.
What part of the, is that Canada or United States?
That's United States.
I'm sorry, the coin was from Norway, or where was the coin
from?
Yeah,
a Norwegian one. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's so funny, because
there might be other things.
There's stories of Celtic coins found in the Mississippi River as far north as Michigan.
Yes.
And there's also evidence, well, we don't know how good it is. I haven't seen these, but there's Roman coins that have been found in the Mississippi as well, on the coastal areas. And that makes, you know, that's easily 1,000 years in the past. So if you were to project into, like, say, the next 5 years, would you say that you could push the Viking settlements in the United or North America even further back, or do you kind of stand hard on 1,000 years?
Well, knowing that they landed in Greenland in 985, so it can be it can go much more earlier. But some people, other people, I'm sure have been there. Selves have been there. But this is another subject.
Yeah, it's another topic. This is fascinating. Talk a little bit about, and you write this, the mixed race of the Inuit and the Vikings. And also, I want you to present just a little bit of information on the research you've done in a topic known as Eskimology, which I didn't even realize was a discipline. What do we know when you study the history of the Eskimos? In other words, what kind of information is it? More oral traditions? They didn't write anything down, did they?
No. But it was collected by the first missionaries. Unfortunately, they were not writing down. But what is interesting, they have this tradition for some kind of tales. They used to give it to give them. How do you say word for word? It never changed. So, for example, there are other tales that used to give pretty good information about the location, and they gave quite many details. And for this, it was quite interesting to use for research, because all these details they give were a bit underscored, yeah. Oh, no, were a bit ignored.
So these priests took this information down, and they created a number of volumes of information known as a history of something, or is there a name for the research that they compiled?
Well, there was one Danish administrator who was quite famous in collecting these tales. That was Heinrich Rink. He did it in the 18th century. So you can even find these tales in English.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was just some kind of historical work he was doing. Because in this time, they were still looking for the last descendants of the Vikings. They still believed they could find them, but they were gone.
Fascinating.
And so they find some satisfaction with this kind of testimony from the natives.
Talk a little bit briefly as we conclude. I haven't had a problem. I've worked with indigenous Mayan in Mexico, who have a long oral tradition, but it seems to be a problem for Western academics to take oral traditions and use it as valid data. How do we justify using oral traditions as a solid piece of research data?
Well, I'm just using it like, I don't present these tales like a scientific document, but I just point out that putting them away would be a mistake, and that's what you have done for a long time. And anyway, as I told you, they used to be pretty neutral, and they used to give back many information without transformation, contrary to the sagas, for example, because mm-hmm. the sagas were doing for embellishing some families and giving a good a few of kings or so on. That was not the purpose of these native tales. And let's say, for example, that's by using native tales that I think that was a Perry boat that was found back in up north in the Arctic. Because the searcher who were looking for this old ship that was wrecked used the old native stories. So I think that's just what I try to do.
I'm just curious because I would say that, and we've had other, we had an indigenous archaeologist, her name is Paulette Steeves, Dr. Paulette Steeves, who has an entire book based on oral traditions of settlements in North America. Mm-hmm. And a great deal of her research is based on these oral traditions that are handed down, but she also uses comparative study between different tribes that lived in the North America that had the same stories or myths. And that's a form of validation, right? Rather than one native people saying, this is the way we see it, this is what's handed down. She was able to corroborate the data by saying it was here in this part of the country, and this event also affected these people in this part of the country. So that's corroborative evidence. It's like forensic evidence in a way. So what do you say to that in your research?
Well, for me, all these testimonies, they are really valuable. So that was a mistake that we never used them before. But of course,
so we've lost a lot of information, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
we
have. Well, it's changing a little bit. I hope it will change with the work I'm presenting.
Yeah, your book's excellent. For those of you listening, Mysteries of the Far North just came out. It came out last month in March. And it's really well written. It has some wonderful maps in it. But what makes this book really, really interesting is that Jacques has taken photographs of these various dwellings that are either have been recreated in their original form, or in some cases, there's actually mud huts that are perhaps many hundreds, or if not older, years old, that were used as living dwellings. So very, very well done, and a real important contribution to our understanding of ancient people in North America. So, hey, Jacques, much success on this.
Well, thank you. By the way, I found the name of this Ari, that was Ari Thorgilsson, the author of the Icelandic book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What was he? Was he from, was he a Swede?
No, he was Icelandic.
Oh, he's from Iceland.
Icelander. Yeah.
Icelander, okay.
Because the older colony came from Iceland. Well, there were some from Norway, but most of the colony came from Iceland, yeah.
So it sounds to me, as we conclude, that it doesn't really... You won't be surprised if they find a dwelling or artifacts in Hudson Bay area or even around there that are attributed to Viking.
Yeah. Well, I think the farther north you go, and the more you will find them, because all these places are almost virgin.
Right.
Down south, it's a bit more difficult because, they have traveled quite far south. Many people say that they might have been in a New York area, but how to discover remnants and
we'd have to have artifacts to kind of prove that, unless there's oral traditions of them being there, I guess.
Yeah, but there are still chances to find new things, and you have the stones too that are debated. And
you mean the ruins that are found?
Yeah. So,
wow. Hey, well, listen, it's great having you on the program. This is a wonderful contribution to knowledge of early people in North America. And you've done a hell of a job completing this book. So thank you very much. I appreciate being on the show.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to discuss all these things.
Each year, Earth Ancients heads to Mexico for a private tour of some of the most intriguing ruins from the Maya and other Mesoamerican cultures. This year, November 10th through the 17th, we'll be heading to Vera Hermosa in southern Mexico to see the site of the Olmec ruins at La Venta. This includes a visit to the world-famous outdoor museum where there are megaliths of all sizes and shapes. We then head to Palenque in Chiapas and visit this jewel of the Maya Empire with Dr. Edwin Barnhart as our host. We'll be there for 2 days, and then we head out to Bonampak, site of one of the largest murals left to us from the Maya classic period. For more information and details on this tour, go to earthancients.com/tours, and you'll see the entire itinerary and more details. This is a one-of-a-kind tour with Dr. Ed Barnhart and yours truly. For more information, earthancients.com/tours.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I mentioned at the beginning of the program that Jacques' book is very timely, following the discovery from this Icelandic university of wood in Greenland coming from North America. A number of noted forests that are noted for their quality of wood, and it was analyzed, proving that the Vikings were in North America 500 years before Columbus discovered the island chain in the Caribbean area. So this is more proof, obviously, that people were in the Americas much earlier. And most people know this. Most people know. What I think is interesting to note in this interview also is the Inuit people of Greenland and their interbreeding with the people from Norway, the Vikings, and that history. And it just shows you that migrations have been happening for thousands of years. You know, we get a picture of the world, a fairly active world. And when we begin adding that to what Dr. Paulette Steves is revealing, that Homo sapiens have been in North America over 100,000 years, it's pushing our dates way, 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 way back. I'm waiting to see ruins. Now, we haven't found pyramids in the United States. We found mud pyramids or mounds. All you have to do is cross the border into Mexico. This is where you start finding pyramids because there's available quarries, stone outlets where you can cut and form blocks of stone. I, for some reason, believe, other than American Stonehenge, which really isn't a pyramid, it's a stone enclosure, stone building. We don't see them. We don't see pyramids. But I think they're going to uncover one. I just have this feeling that up and down the Mississippi, there are ruins that are waiting to be discovered. That would be a real eye-opener to find a pyramidal structure that, you know, predates the mound builders.
I just have this weird feeling that it's going to happen. We know from researchers that the Maya were up into Georgia and into Florida, because that's not that much of a migration. That's not much of a seafaring ride from, say, northern Yucatan into the southern states of Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, and so forth. And why not discover Mayan ruins into some of the Delta, Mississippi Delta area? And the weird thing about it is there's a number of mound builders in Ohio and other locations that have created stoneware and ceramic figurines that are identical to Mayan figurines. In fact, some of the sculptures I've posted on the Facebook page are identical when you study the features to Maya ruins. You don't get archaeologists to buy off on that. That's just too much for them to consider. So great to have Jacques on the program. By the way, his book just came out, and it is available on Amazon. Mysteries of the Far North: The Secret History of the Vikings in Greenland and North America. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Ancients, please consider becoming a subscriber to our Patreon page. For as little as $5 a month, you can support the work we do here at Earth Ancients. And we put out 3 programs a month. We put out Earth Ancients every Saturday, Destiny every Wednesday, and we sprinkle Earth Ancient Special Edition of the Archives a couple of times a month, and we love doing these things. But they do cost a great deal of money, effort, and your donation, your subscription of $5, $10, $15, even $20 a month makes a huge difference. To become a subscriber, go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and subscribe. We have a whole bunch of great gifts for you. A lot of our guests have provided e-copies of their books. Some of them are very early editions, so some of them are kind of spicy. And we have, I think, 30 books that you can download as our gift. There's also some unedited interviews, some galleries. And I pop up every month, say, hey, what's going on? So this is a way to stay very much involved with Earth Ancients. And I got to say, I really appreciate our subscribers, because it really helps us pay important bills. Keeps the lights on. Again, to become a subscriber, go to patreon.com/Earth Ancients. Hey, I want to remind you, I just finished a really insightful interview with Dr. John Brandenburg. This is this program that's going to be Saturday. We're launching it Saturday, May 20th. It's Confessions of a NASA Space Scientist with Dr. John Brandenburg. And this is an insider's look, no holds barred, at what the administration of NASA is doing. It includes a short clip of a well-known congressman asking a number of NASA scientists if there is any proof of ruins or a civilization on Mars, and they flat out lie to the guy and say, no, there's no proof of anything like civilization. And John comments on that, as well as a number of other issues revolving around the evidence of atmospheric chemicals, compounds, and isotopes that show that there was a great war on Mars. We don't talk about the Mahabharata enough and its connection to a galactic war, the war for Earth, but a number of people interpret the Mars as part of that war. And the asteroid field was once a planet that was destroyed in the Great War, featured in the Mahabharata, this great epic from India. That includes a lot of technology, and we've had scholars on the program to talk about
that technology and just what it means. So John Brandenburg's my guest, May 20th, Confessions of a NASA Space Scientist. It was really, really fun. I hadn't spoken to John in almost 3 years because of just him moving around. He went dark for almost a year on some projects, and he's really a great interview, and I think you're going to like it. So stay tuned for that one. Saturday, May 20th, here on Earth Ancients. All right, that's it for this program. I want to thank my guest today, Jacques Privet, coming to us from France. Mysteries of the Far North is the book. As always, the team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and everyone else who makes the show happen. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. You guys rock. All right. Take care. Be well. And we'll talk to you next time.